We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall, did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.
PM team, thanks for finding us on a very sunny, pleasant Tuesday, however you're listening. Odyssey app, the radio in your car, watching it on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, things of that nature. Currently, what's happening in studio, to take you behind the scenes, my particular computer that I sit at has an audio issue, which is why you've maybe heard some lengthy bed intros during this week. I keep forgetting that the audio seems to not be playing correctly, so I have to then panicked tell Donnie or intern Jack to, hey, play this real quick for me. I can't play it. And now one of our tech guys is doing the whole thing where they take over the computer remotely and try to fix it. So I'm like watching the whole thing in real time unfold. So there will be maybe a little bit of a limited computer use for me for the next 10 minutes. Not that you need to know too much about that. And I'm not making any excuses because I have everything written down. Pony out today. He's playing dad daycare, surprise dad daycare. I've been there. Donnie will be there someday. Intern Jack will be there someday too, although he's like 10 years old, so he's got a ways to go. But Pony should be back in the saddle tomorrow and ready to roll. I saw this story yesterday. I did not have a chance to include it in today's rundown. Hold on, as I text, as I say thank you to our tech guy, because he seemed to fix this. I saw this yesterday, and I did not include it yesterday in the show, but I thought today would probably be a good day for it. I was haunting the YouTube comments this morning, listening to Crowley. I heard him going over it, and it was this story. So ESPN is starting to really ramp up all their football content. Not that it ever really goes away, because football is a 365-day-a-year sport, and ESPN has a major hand in making it that way. All good. They did this. They ranked across the NFL, and I do feel like, because the Steelers haven't won a playoff game in so long, that now we are reduced to sometimes doing, and I've blamed people for this with the Myles Garrett, TJ Watt individual battle. Like, back in the day, you used to get up in your ivory Steelers tower and say, oh yeah, that's fine, you think your wide receiver's better than ours, or you think this guy's better than our counterpart. We keep winning titles. Is Brian Hoyer better than Ben Roethlisberger? Oops, don't think so. Is Derek Anderson better than Ben Roethlisberger? Maybe for 1 year he was kind of close, but no. And so on and so forth. And like, getting mad sometimes about these things on social media, I'm not saying people are walking around going, did you hear? Did you hear how ESPN ranked their roster? But like, getting mad on social media about this stuff has become a bit of a pastime. So I heard Crowley going on and on about it and kind of breaking it all down and going piece by piece with Callis, who was busy researching the 1927 Yankees when he should have been paying attention. And I thought to myself, I don't think ESPN got this wrong. Like, this felt like sort of a necessary commentary on where the Steelers are at. That's at least how I looked at it. Because if you're jammed up that they rank the Steelers the 19th best roster in the league, basically bottom third or close to it, bottom third adjacent, I think that you're really just pointing out the nature of things and pointing out sort of where they rank or how they have adjusted or not adjusted, the Steelers, that is, of course, versus the way the NFL has adjusted or shifted around them. Because when you rank an NFL roster, you rank it understanding that the quarterback position is of outsized weight and importance above all the rest. That should just go without saying. That's why I found PFF ranking Garrett number one among all players in the NFL so silly. He plays a very important position. He is not better than Burrow, Jackson, Mahomes, Allen. You can probably make a case for Stafford, even at his age, to still be way up there. You know that the quarterback position, if you're doing one of these rankings like ESPN did, you know that that like carries a massive amount of weight. How many times have we said in the Mahomes era, the Chiefs don't have the best roster, they just have Houdini wrapped up with, like, NFL Jesus under center, and it just papers over so many issues. They beat the Niners, what, twice in Super Bowls. Both times, top to bottom, the Niners probably had better rosters. They beat the Eagles in a Super Bowl. probably Philly had the better roster. They finally got smoked by Philly, and they got smoked by Tampa in situations where they were so compromised coming in, Mahomes just couldn't keep doing what he was doing. But then I like looked at the list, and I don't know, it makes sense to me. Baltimore, best roster according to ESPN. I'd quibble with that because they have Philly at number two. I'd flip-flop them. I would. Now, they probably got the bump because Jackson is better than Hurts, but Philly's roster, top to bottom, is as stacked as it gets. Howie Roseman's the best doing this, and there's a reason that they are in contention every single year now. It's because of him. Detroit, 3, no issue there. Buffalo, 4, same deal. KC, 5, that sounds about right. They've still got arguably the best in the game, although he's got real competition. But their roster, sometimes you look at it and you say, there's little holes I could poke. Here's one that should surprise and possibly worry you. Denver at 6. Bo Nix ain't the dudes that are in front of him at quarterback, but Bo Nix is better than I thought he would be, and that roster is good. Capital G, good to very good, even, around him. Problem. If you're scoring at home, 4 of the first 6 teams on this are AFC teams. Washington, 7. They have Daniels. The Rams are 8. They have Stafford. The Bengals are 9. Joe Scheisty, where are you, Don? Joey Burr. Your buddy. The Niners are 10th, even with their roster going through a little bit of a transition period. I think Purdy's still good, and they still have Nick Bosa. They still have other dudes. Minnesota's 11th. Dudes. Got players. Tampa. That is a very good roster. I think Tampa might actually be undersold. Houston, Green Bay. Chicago, I thought was a little odd. The Chargers have a good roster. They just have to get out of their own way. I think Arizona, Dallas, Steelers, 17, 18, 19. Go any way about it that you want. Point is, like, I think this is just putting on display where the Steelers are deficient. They have 41-year-old Aaron Rodgers as their quarterback. You know, if you take a standardized test or something, or if you take a test where the essay portion is weighted 75% or 65% and everything else is weighted 35, if you ace the essay portion and are okay at the rest, you're probably going to get a better grade than the guy who gets an A- at the rest and has a C or a C- at the essay portion. That's what it is with the Steelers. Oh, wow, you think Cincy's weaker because Shamar Stewart won't show up, Trey Hendrickson won't show up, and they've got major problems on defense? They've got Joe Burrow. In today's NFL, I would rather try to win games 41-38 than I would 17-14, period. Oh, you think the Ravens are not as complete? They maybe don't have a great offensive line. Jackson, Lamar, done. Like, this is a reflection, I think, what ESPN came up with here, of two things for the Steelers. How they've chosen to build this team, which is sort of the more minor detail. And I think it's really, if you're going to, Larry and Lawrenceville, cover your ears, pal. Okay, here comes some real negativity. It really shows how, since Roethlisberger retired, they have absolutely bungled the quarterback position. If they had just for argument's sake, taken Brock Purdy, and he had essentially proven himself to be the same kind of player he is with the Niners. So definitely a top 12-ish quarterback, I would say, in the league is where Purdy sits. Steelers would probably be 5 or 6 spots higher in this. They'd probably be around where Minnesota or San Francisco is because you'd feel pretty good about their quarterback, and then you'd like a lot of other pieces. They bungled quarterback, and they have built more on defense than anybody else in the league for a pretty good long while now. How do you come up with anything other than that? They have now a quarterback who's coming off a 5-win season, about whom there are real questions as far as how much is left in the tank. They just traded Minka. They traded George Pickens. Yeah, they sort of zeroed out both of those and then some with those two are out. In is DK Metcalf. In is Jalen Ramsey. In is Jonnu Smith. They've got questions at tackle, both tackles. They're thin, I think, on the defensive line after Hayward in terms of proven commodities. I don't love their corners that aren't named Jalen Ramsey. Darius Slay is 34. Joey Porter Jr. needs to have a bounce back third year. Juan Thornhill stunk last year. Deshaun Elliott's good. I like him. But like, they're not in the class or the caliber of pretty much any of the 5 teams at the very top. If you start looking around at Denver's roster, you see that they've got a lot to like. It just feels like an accurate thing. And it feels like a reflection of, hey, we chose to build on defense. Please pay no attention to the fact that that defense gets run over late in seasons. And, hey, we still haven't figured out quarterback. Get back to us when we do. 412-928-9370. That is the fan text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. ESPN, now though, ESPN, they pretty much panned the Steelers roster. They put them down there with some of the dregs of the league, either teams with rookie quarterbacks that have a lot to prove, New England's a couple spots behind them, teams like Seattle that I think are hoping on a guy like Sam Darnold out there. Team like Dallas, a perpetual underachiever.
We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall, did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.
Achiever, where, yeah, the very basic pieces are nice. Lamb, Prescott, solid. Micah's is just about as good as it gets. And yet there's a lot of devil in the details type stuff. I don't feel like the Steelers are getting dogged here. I do feel like it's hard for people to fathom that, oh, wow, they have TJ Watt. Like, if you look at the names, actually, on the roster, think about this. Okay, you start with Watt and Hayward. Those two guys damn well better both have gold jackets when their careers are over. And I know Watt's going to have one. Hayward ought to. Highsmith is a very good edge rusher, especially in a complimentary role. You like that. Jalen Ramsey, that career looked like it was ticketed for Canton. Still looks like he'll go down as one of the better corners of his era, especially if he has like a late 20s into early 30s renaissance situation happening, or more of an early 30s renaissance, I should say. You look at Freiermuth. I mean, again, Pat Freiermuth in a better passing offense these last couple years, you'd feel like he was a true upper tier tight end instead of a guy where it's like, okay, is he going to break out? Jonnu Smith coming off a career year. And so you could look at, and you'd look at the outlay they had put together for their offensive line and how they've tried to approach the draft. You'd feel like this roster is better than 19th, but when you're weighing quarterbacks so heavily, the Bengals are going to be 10 spots ahead because they have Joe Burrow, because they have Ja'Marr Chase, because they have T. Higgins. Though it's an offensive league, and I feel like if you're looking at the Steelers and saying, this doesn't add up, how can you have X, Y, and Z players and be ranked near the bottom third of like quality rosters in the NFL? You're missing the point that defense just doesn't go as far as it used to. ESPN, they get it just right. Too high, too low. Steelers, 19th best roster heading into this season. I think if anything, it's just right. Can you quibble and put them ahead of Arizona or Dallas? Sure. You want to put them like right smack? That would put them just about smack dab in the middle of the NFL. I can live with that. But they don't deserve to be any higher. And I think it should be a wake-up call. Nationally, people would say, oh, if Mike Tomlin gets the 19th best roster of the playoffs, what a genius. We know better here. We know his fingerprints are all over the crime scene here. What say you? 412-928-9370. Bob is in Zelianople. Hello, Bob.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
I'm good. You can say guys. I mean, there's two other people working on this show. It's fine. They're just not on the air every second of it.
Okay, guys. I love these polls. These polls mean nothing in July. Let's talk about it in January when the teams finish up. I'll throw a couple polls out to say the Steelers have one of the better 53-man rosters. It's just all subjective, all just to get people to talk about it.
I know you understand. I don't think you get the assignment here and why it is what it is. It sounds like it got you slightly fired up. But let me ask you something, Bob. I liked when I grew up and before I was in sports media, man, in the early days of like the internet in like the early 2000s, I would devour every power ranking I could find every week to see where the Steelers ranked. And I would get very pissed off if they ranked lower than I thought they should have. But if you're saying check back in January, is that the greatest thing to say when the Steelers haven't won a playoff game since 2016 season?
Well, as I have said in the past, I would much rather going into December knowing they had a chance to be in the playoffs. Because you cannot name me a team that missed the playoffs that won the Super Bowl. Yeah, they played some bad games. But then again, too, remember when they got against Indianapolis? How many people in Pittsburgh thought they were going to beat Indianapolis in that playoff game? They didn't. You can't win the Super Bowl unless you get there. And I love listening to, like, Tony's a big guy. He'll keep saying, we need the top 10 quarterback. I'm glad to find out that that top 10 quarterback is a franchise quarterback all the time and a Hall of Famer. He ain't. I'd much rather watch Steelers in December and enjoy them than...
Let me ask you, now you're getting somewhere interesting with me. So I don't think you're saying you're complacent, but you are, it sounds like, on some level, happy that they are relevant year after year and that you're not watching games that don't matter, correct?
100%. I don't want them to be out of it in October. I don't want them to be in Cleveland.
All right, let me ask you a hypothetical trade. Would you make this trade? I'm going to guarantee you that the quarterback, let's just say it's back in the day. Let's just say Peyton Manning, and you already know he's going to be a stud, is in the draft, and you got to be number one overall to get him, right? Would you sacrifice a year where you had to watch a 2-14 or nowadays 3-14 football team if it meant you were getting that kind of player?
That's hypothetical. Of course you'd want a Peyton Manning, a John Elway, all those guys.
Now, let me ask you a little finer point on it, though, because I think you would probably, if you thought about it, say yes. Let's just say it's Arch Manning and he has a really good year at Texas, but you have no earthly idea how it'll translate to the pros. Everyone thinks it's going to work well, but they don't know for sure. If I tell you 3-14 gets you Arch Manning, but all he is a very well-known lottery ticket, what do you say to that?
I want to watch him in December having a chance at the playoffs. It doesn't matter about who they pick, because for every Archie Manning, I'll show you Nakeely Smith. I'll show you the guy that went to San Diego.
But you do know,
jail right now.
Sure, but you do know that, like, the majority of the good quarterbacks that are playing right now in the league are first round picks, right?
Well, like you said, Tom Brady. You like the guy from San Francisco.
Tom Brady's the exception that proves the rule. Those might be the only two good sixth round quarterbacks ever, Bob. Like, really good. Baltimore's Lamar Jackson, late first. Jalen Hurts, second round. Jared Goff, number one overall pick. Josh Allen, what, eighth overall pick, I believe, in his draft. Mahomes was, I want to say, 10th for some reason. That sticks in my head. Bo Nix was a first round pick. Jaden Daniels was the number two overall pick. Matt Stafford, number one overall. Joe Burrow, number one overall. McCarthy, we have no idea what he'll look like in Minnesota, but he was eighth overall. When they had Darnold last year, third overall. Baker, first overall. Stroud, second overall. Jordan Love, a developmental guy picked in the first round. Caleb Williams, number one. Justin Herbert, top 10. Kyler, and I'm getting to guys that have, like, made playoff appearances I don't even think are that good. Kyler, a number one. There just aren't very many Brock Purdy and Tom Brady's. There aren't even many Dak Prescott's. There aren't many Russell Wilson's. Like, I think it's a pipe dream to suggest, especially given this team's complete and utter inability to identify the right guy, I think it's a pipe dream to think that they're going to just suddenly figure it out at that position. Mr. Old School chiming in here. Hey, Mr. Old School.
Hey, what's going on, man? Hey, the one disagreement I had with you that, you know, you bring up Denver saying, you know, Denver's a great team, a good team. Steelers beat Denver last year 27-19. Well, what did Denver do in the offseason that propels them now greater than the Steelers, who did a lot in the offseason? We can say all we want that
were the Steelers on the hamster wheel, or are they really, like, the treadmill, or were they really moving forward? I think they're slightly better after the offseason than they were before it, the Steelers, that is.
Well, no, I think our secondary is a lot better. I think
so.
Minka,
you were down on Minka then. That's a full-throated endorsement of Jalen Ramsey, I'm hearing, and a down on Minka vote, right?
No question about it. Minka lost a step. We played him in the box. We played him in the center field. He just was not.
All right. Can I answer your first question or your first statement about what did the Broncos do to be this much higher on the list?
Right.
I'm going to tell you what it is. Like, in part, I think they have better players than people think, because it's not like a big name defense, but it's good players. Here's what they did. Their quarterback through three games last year had no touchdowns and four interceptions. And then for the rest of the season, threw 29 touchdowns and 8 picks. And that is a major reason why people are a lot more bullish on them. Like, which goes back, Mr. Old School, and I got to let you go because we got to get to Greg Brown here in a couple minutes. That goes back to the thesis here. This is still more about the quarterback. If the Steelers find a quarterback, they will jump up the rankings on one of these lists next year. Well, no, they won't, because they'll have just drafted the guy, so it'll be like where the Patriots are with Drake May or something right now, although he's already played a year. You get what I'm saying. They're not getting dogged. It's just a reflection of where the league is at. I'm fascinated by Bob and Zillion Opal's call. No offense to anybody else. I would just love to sit there, like, fly on the wall in his living room in December. The Steelers are kind of muddling along, but they're in the race, and he's like, thank God for relevance. Hell yeah, relevance, baby. They're 7-4 or 7-5, and they're kind of stuck in neutral. They've lost two in a row or something after a surprisingly good start, and the warts are appearing. But, baby, those boys are relevant on the North Shore.
We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall, did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.
Pitch and a fly ball to center field. Back is Cruz, warning track, and he'll have room to make the catch. Final out, that could be the final batter for Paul Skeens. A 1-2-3 sixth. Six shutout innings for Skeens.
Fan Hotline's presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. The man behind that call waits for us on said Fan Hotline right now. Pirates broadcaster Greg Brown joins us a little bit early today, but we're happy to accommodate him, especially coming off another dominant Paul Skeens effort. Brownie, first and foremost, though, I felt bad for Zangrilli. He pinch hit for Joe Block, very excited for him. We were all pumped for him. And I was hoping he'd have like a signature moment, maybe a Cruz laser beam home run or somebody, you know, a terrific play that saved the game. And they just gave him three flapjacks, three flat performances. He was given nothing. The artist was given no paint for his easel.
I agree with you. I felt terrible for him. I'm happy for him. Not surprised how good he is. How good he was, but he'll get more shots. This is not just a one time deal.
He already let us know. He let us in on it. He said there's going to be a Cubs, at least a game or maybe a series against the Cubs, where he's going to get another crack at it. So we were very excited. I'm curious. Did he ask you for any? Was there any kind of on Dan's part? Hey, Greg, how have you done this? Or like, I have a question about this random part of the broadcast or how you do things. Any appeals to you for?
I mean,
little
not
advice?
Really. Not really, because I've known him since he was a broadcaster for the Altoona Curve, so I've known him forever, and we chat a lot, and he doesn't need advice from me. I mean, he's my gosh. I told him I was driving around this winter and heard the high school football. I think he was doing the playoffs right at times.
Yeah, he does the high school football. Yeah, for 100.1 FM and 1020.
Yeah. I mean, so good. And I said that to him. I shouldn't have been surprised, but I kind of was like, wow, this guy's really good. And I heard him do baseball play-by-play years ago. So he didn't need advice from me. You know, I guess the one thing I did tell him was like, my gosh, you know, this isn't a one-shot deal. You'd be doing this more often. And you're so good. And, you know, he's humble about it. But
we do love giving him a hard time here, though, because when he'll do the preview shows, sometimes he likes to. I think he does it now. He leans into it. He would get the Padres in town, and he'd call them the Friars, the Monsignors. He had like a team nickname thesaurus that we would just love. The Baby Bears for the Cubs. Greg Giannotti back in the day used to just revel in delight in all the names that Dan would come up with for these teams. But yeah, he wasn't. I was like, I said to him yesterday because we had him on, Greg. I said, man. Like, you have bad stretches of baseball in any given year for any team, but he was given really very little to work with in that series. I couldn't believe it. I don't think the team even hit a home run in those three games. I thought he'd at least get to do some sort of a home run call, and he was robbed the chance to do that.
Three flatliners for him, just right off the bat. It was a shame. I'm glad it's not a one-off. I'm glad he'll be doing more. And they'll be playing better baseball the next time. But yeah, he got maybe the three worst games of the year.
And I really can't argue with that. I actually, I was, I was at the Saturday game, and my kids were playing on the playground in right field because they're 6 and 3, so it's hard to get them to sit still for, you know, 3+ hours or whatever it might take. And that was when everything went to pot. So maybe I need to plant my fanny in the seat next time, and not, you know, better things will happen for this team. Greg, I'll use that though to transition to this. Man, it felt like if I'm trying to tie those games to last night, you just start to feel like the hope for the Pirates sooner rather than later can somehow be that instead of having to stop ugly losing skids or ugly stretches of baseball, that Paul Skeens is extending winning streaks where the Pirates win 2 or 3 in a row and then have a really good opponent, but you just know you can send that guy out there and get that kind of result. That was from as bad of a 3-game stretch as I can remember them playing this year too, given the quality of opponent, one of the more impressive starts he or anybody has made for this team this year. That looked too easy for him last night.
Yeah, it looked like the definition of a stopper, Chris, really. And that's what he is. He's the man. He's pitched like that since his debut in May of last year. But it was almost like he decided, and he looked fresh, you know, having not pitched since just that one inning, 3 batters on Tuesday. They gave him extra rest. He was revved. He was ready to go. And just almost like he was going to – the Pirates are going to win the game. It was his determination. Okay, enough's enough. Enough is enough. We are going to go out there, and I'm going to just continue to put out zeros until you guys score some runs and we'll win this thing. And, I agree with you, too, that in the not-too-distant future, you want him to either begin a long winning streak or continue one. And, I guess which is both. And it's what we figured when he came on board, that he was going to – and that's why it was so peculiar that they've had such long, you know, relatively long losing streaks the last couple of years, because you thought when he came on board – they won't be able to have long. It'll stop at 4. Day 5, it'll be Skeens, and the losing streak will end. But, it's the same old story. Well,
unfortunately,
about
this team
offense
has taken that as almost a challenge. Oh, wait a minute. 7 shutout innings? We can get the man a no decision. I mean, that's been the bummer to watch offensively. So we're going to talk at least one more time, Greg, before the trade deadline hits. But can you remember – covering this team as you have for many years, can you remember maybe a more interesting one where there is uncertainty swirling about the man who will be making the moves, but, you know, absent that, he's got to try to figure out a way to make this team better in the very short term, but it's probably going to take at least one of the assets that's made them pretty good. I'm talking about Keller here, to get the kind of returns that might actually move the needle on the other side with the hitting. It does feel like, from a lot of perspectives, a very interesting deadline to follow, and they are a very interesting team to follow during all of this.
I would agree with you that this is such a peculiar and unique, unusual moment in recent history because of what you just stated, Chris. In the past, you knew that they were going to be starting over, essentially. It was around the All-Star break. They were going to regroup it was a rebuild, the players that have been dealt in the past. And then on the other side, in fact, most of the time when there have been significant trades leading up to the deadline, it's been to tweak, to bring in some bats or a pitcher, Jay Happ, Marlon Byrd, whoever it might be. Sean Dunstan back in 1997.
I remember Sean. 2 home runs in his first game, I believe.
Yep. Yes, he did. And but this is so unusual because they are not going to rebuild. They are going to try and build for next year to win next year. And I know that was the goal coming into this year. It didn't happen. So now this chore, this task, is to try and bring in a bat or two without totally dismantling and disrupting what they believe is the basis for a foundation for a team that can win. And as we've said so many times, it's nothing newsworthy. It's not genius, but they don't have to score many runs with a strong pitching staff. And so I don't know how they're going to do it, but I think it's very interesting. I'm curious. And as I said back to you and Andrew a few weeks ago, I do think something big will happen between now and the deadline. I don't know what. I don't know exactly when, but I continue to believe that it will.
Well, and to finish this off, and I'm just going to say it straight away because there's no reason to sugarcoat or dance around it. If the team struggles badly on the field the rest of the way, the man who makes these moves, if the owner is sufficiently unhappy with the team that he built to this point, and if they lose 95 or more or something like that, there's not even a guarantee that Ben Cherington, I would imagine, comes back next year if Bob Nutting is sufficiently displeased with the overall performance of this year's team. So that, to me, adds a layer of urgency that I wonder how very bloodlessly it's going to influence Ben Cherington's decision-making if he feels internally like there's a certain, not desperation, but a certain higher level of urgency to be more aggressive because of what might happen if he isn't aggressive this offseason.
I thought about that a lot. I thought about it going back to the offseason when they kept Ben and Derek Shelton. About that you know, there's an urgency to win in 2025, and how are they going to handle that? And watching Ben, and I don't know him intimately. You know, I don't know. He's a focused guy. He doesn't give away much. He's got a sense of seriousness about him and focus. And I've been thinking this a lot to your question the last few days, that he's not, I don't believe, the type of personality that is going to do that. And I can't name someone off the top of my head that would, but for him specifically, I don't see him as a guy that's saying to himself, you know, my job's on the line. I'm going to do this come heck or high water to save my tail. I just don't think he's like that. I believe he believes in what he's doing and is going to stay true to the process, and thinks that if he makes move A, B, or C, it's going to lead to this winning in 2026. So he's just not that way. I don't think he's wired that way. He doesn't think, you know, selfishly about his job. He really believes that what he's doing is going to help the organization. And he also believes, too, that he has failed this fan base. I know that for a fact. And that really drives him crazy and upsets him a whole heck of a lot, because he wants to really deliver for this fan base.
He'll have his next chance to do that at the deadline and up to the deadline, because there's no law against making trades. Brownie, appreciate you joining us as always. We'll do this again next week. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
Greg Brown. And he gave a little, he didn't say they didn't need to give Dan Zangrilli pointers. Dan really did get three just absolute, like, bowling shoe ugly performances. And that made me respect Joe Block, who does it every day more. If you get hit with a bunch of those, imagine being the Rocky. I know it's bad for the Pirates, but like, let's point and laugh like it's the Simpsons at the team that's even worse. Can you imagine doing Rockies play-by-play right now on the radio? You're trying to paint a picture, you know, theater of the mind, paint a verbal picture, and the team is basically handing you diarrhea to paint with. Ugh.
We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall, did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.